The game plan is as follows. We are now nearing the fourth and last parak of Megillah Esros, and the plan is to try, to the best of our ability, to be able to complete the fourth parak, the end of the third and the fourth parak today and share. I'm going through fast, but not fast, not too fast to miss the main points. And then starting next week, we'll have two standalone pieces, which are going to be trying to encompass themes, ideas of the Megillah as a whole, now having had the opportunity to go through it, having seen the text, having seen the inside, and then we're going to get a perspective from the outside. So those 2 weeks will be a very interesting way to begin Shavuot, to start with that perspective in mind. Without much further ado, so just bearing that in mind, I'd like to keep a minimum speed limit. You know, somehow ways you have maximum speed limits, so we're going to have a minimum speed limit today, just to make sure that we get through to the end of the Megillah, because we're not going to have time at the beginning of next week's share to catch up on the text, and I'd really like to make sure we finish. So with that in mind, we're on page 6 in the text, which is actually Perek Gimel, and we are in Pasuk Yud Beis. This is Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yud Beis. We are in the middle of a conversation, the conversation between Rus and Boaz. Rus has identified Boaz as being the Goel, as being the Redeemer. She is the one who has now isolated him as the Redeemer and made the request to spread his wings over her. And he responds by saying, I will do whatever you want me to say. We saw that was reminiscent of her acceptance of Naomi's words. And finally, the words he says at the end over here in Pasuk Yud Beis is, Va'ata, and now, ki omnam, it is true, ki, now you see that word im over there is actually without vowels, because that's really not said. Goel Anochi, I am a redeemer, which means it is a ksiv v'loy kri. It is written in the Megillah, but we don't read that word. So I am the redeemer. V'gam yesh goel karov imeni. There is a redeemer who is closer than me. So your request actually has a different address. Things we should notice, there are many times we've seen already, and we will see, is that the text of the Megillah is conveying different levels of emotion. So therefore, even the unsaid words convey something about what Boaz is thinking or feeling, even though he's maybe not saying it, as we don't read it. What's the im doing over here? What's the silent word doing over here? Right, so the point is that there's doubt in his mind. Be it the doubt that there's going to be somebody else who's going to take his place. Be it the doubt that maybe he's still maybe thinking about this. Maybe there's some doubt in his own mind. But the point is that there's something in it, at the back of his mind, which is doubtful. He's not expressing it like we don't express that word as we read the Megillah. Right? So that the same construct that we've been conveyed, the verbal and also the emotional level of Boaz's conversation over here. That he is saying there is I am a goyel, or am I a goyel? Right? It's in this very sentence. Now, something which should make us think a little bit at this point is, if there is another goyel, another redeemer, who is actually closer related than he is to Rus and Naomi, and therefore has incumbent upon him the responsibility of redeeming Rus and Naomi, then this really highlights the fact that, so why didn't they speak beforehand? This has been at the very least 3 months, as the Malbim points out. So the fact that there's somebody else here who we don't even know yet is strange. It's perplexing. Why didn't they talk? If not the Goel to Rus and Naomi, they should have at least talked about it. They should have had a meeting. What do we do about our relative who's removed back into town? That's something which is of concern to us as the reader when he mentions this heretofore unknown fact. And we move on to Pasuk Yud Gimel into this conversation. Boaz gives her instructions. Lini halayla, serve tonight. Vahaya baboker, and it'll be in the morning. Im yigo alech tov yigal. If he will redeem you, then I'm going to translate literally. Good, he will redeem. V'im loyach potz legalech, and if he does not want to redeem you, ugaltich anochi chay Hashem, and I will redeem you by the life of God. Shichvi araboker, stay until morning. So what does it mean when he says that im yigalech tov, if he will redeem, good, then he will redeem? What do you think he means over there? What's Boaz saying this for? What's tov in this respect? Yes, Timna.
The name that he's
called. Okay, so fantastic. So just from using what's an academic term in Bible study, it's called closed canon. Closed canon means you're identifying an unknown with a known. Right? Just as we have an unknown. Im yigalech, it sounds like there's a noun in the sentence. If Tov will redeem you, then he will redeem you. So a number of the Mepharshim, most specifically Rashi, right at the bottom of most pages in the Mikras Gedolos, will say that the name of Ploni Amoni, who will meet in just a few seconds, is other name is Tov. So you're saying if this other redeemer, who we've identified as the name Tov, which means good, will redeem you, then fantastic. If not, then I'll take the next step. However, the Ibn Ezra points out that maybe we don't have to even identify names. Maybe he's just saying, whoever this other redeemer is, if he redeems you, then good. You know what? He's a good man. He's a responsible person, at least in general, maybe not in regards to this particular incident. But it'll be good for you. Which means to say that he's saying, I know that the best thing for you is going to be that you're going to be married and he's a good person. That Boaz's interest is her best interest. That's perhaps what Boaz is also saying. If you redeemed, it will be good for you. That's what he may be saying. Yes.
The meaning of Goel, do you mean the property redeemed?
Great.
Or do you mean that Ruth gets married again?
Great. So a very, very good question. And this goes back when the original Goel was mentioned in Perek Beis. What did that mean? It seems to be that both are under dispute here. On the one hand, the financial status of both Ruth and Naomi is at stake, but moreover is actually the lives of their family members. Naomi's husband, Ruth's husband, are at stake for continuation over here, and so that if both filter in over here at this point in time. The demand Ruth has put on the doorstep of Boaz was primarily marriage. Okay, so he may be responding more primarily to that. When he said, for us to convert ala mosecha, it sounds like he's saying she's demanding marriage. So that's perhaps most primarily what she's responding to over here. But yes, both are definitely part of the scene. And in fact, as we start in the few psukim time, it's going to start the other way around with the fields. Okay, so both definitely are very much relevant over here. Let me ask you a question. Why is Boaz swearing? He says, by the life of God. Why does Boaz need to swear to what he's doing? Why does he need to put an oath on what he's doing? Isn't his word good enough? Why does Boaz feel the need to mention an oath to verify, to give veracity to what he's doing? Well, let's take that a little further, Timna. Let's say that Ruth has been waiting for 3 months and nobody's picked up a finger, nobody's done anything in her direction. So he knows that either she makes the demand explicitly or at least subconsciously, he's aware that she is doubtful as to his motives. So he puts the oath in. Don't worry, even though I've been silent for so long, you know what? I will take the responsibility. But that's one possibility over here. So one moment, I want to throw the other possibility out. Esther mentioned last week about the notion of yichud over here. Is that you have a young lady going to spend a night in the granary with a man who's not married, and he may, and this is what this Rashi actually brings a Maimra, a statement in Chazal, which say that Boaz is aware of his own weaknesses too. Boaz is aware of his own weaknesses. Here he is, somebody who would like to marry him, who's single and he's single. He says, you know what, I'm going to make an oath that I will sort this out in the morning. I will make everything become right then. But there's not going to be any relationship now. Maybe he's saying it towards himself as well. Maybe he's putting a harness onto what could naturally be his natural emotions. Timna, you had thoughts? Oh, well, I wonder who's more afraid. Maybe I would say that Ruth is more afraid, which is why he's trying but those are the possibilities, meaning either towards that or towards himself in terms of constraint. Okay, but that's why perhaps he's putting in this extra statement over here, which otherwise we wouldn't necessarily have. And finally, more than that, what does he do? This is in Pasuk Yudalet, Vatishkav Margalosav Ad HaBoker. So we're moving on to the top of page 7. She slept at his feet until the morning. Vatokam Beterem Yakir Ish Esra'eyu, and she got up before anybody could see each other or recognize each other. This is early in the morning. just after dawn. Vayomer al yivoda ki ba isha garen. And he said to her, "Don't let anybody know that the woman came to the granary, because it doesn't take too much to start any rumors. Takes less than that." Tezva vayomer havi mit pahamit pachas asher alayich. Take off the mantle that you have over you. Ve'echazibach v'tochezba. And she said, "Let me just hold it." She holds it. Vadyomad sheish sorim vayoshes alav vayavah ha'ir. And he laid 6 grains of barley on it, and she went to the city.
Measures.
I apologize. So you gave her 6. Well, it says vayomad, he measured sheish sorim, 6 grains of barley. So he measured out the 6 these 6 grains. Now, this is not a large amount of barley. This is not because she needed breakfast. It doesn't sound like. It sounds like there's something else going on over here, which is what leads the Gemara in Sanhedrin to say the following. So, just if you wouldn't mind, turning to page 12, the Gemara picks up on the fact that this seems very symbolic. Seems very symbolic in source 9. Why is it 6 particularly over here? The Gemara suggests this is source 9, Sanhedrin, Sadi Gimel and Beis. The Chidako shall isha little she sa'in. Is it the way of a woman to specifically take 6 measures of barley, or a seya is a particular measure? Ela, rather remez ramaz la. He was giving her a sign. He was giving her a symbol. She asidin shisha banim latseis mimena. That she's going to have 6 children of note. That each will have 6 blessings. Ve'eluhen, these are the 6 children: David, Umashiach, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, va'Azariah. These 6 people who will in the future come out of her were 6 great people, and therefore he gives these 6 grains metaphorically symbolizing this. And the blessings given to Mashiach, Tichsiv, Huncha Olav, Ruach Hashem, Ruach Chochma, Bina, Ruach Eitza, Ugvura, Ruach Das, Viras Hashem. The six blessings that is going to be given to Mashiach. Now, obviously, although we don't have the time to deal with this right now, this is a classic example of how Drash is separate from Pshat, right? If you were to interview Boaz right at that moment and say, "So Boaz, what are your feelings right now? Why is it that you just gave us 6 barley?" He probably would not be saying this Gemara, right? He'd probably not be saying that, "I know that I'm going to identify the six characters in the future." And maybe he had Ruach HaKodesh. And maybe that you want to insert that into his actual conscious level. However, the Drash, just as the Drash is, we'll call it, the subconscious level of text, this is also the subconscious level of emotions which is going on over here. He's doing something which is significant historically and prophetically, even though he may not, so we can argue to the degree of consciousness he has about that. Okay, just to be aware of how the Drash is operating in this particular instance. Okay, so this is a greater topic that we should spend time on, is to what degree is the Drash exactly what he's thinking right now? Okay, but food for thought in general about this. But there certainly is us, for our perspective, for the reader, there is historical relevance. We know that there's going to be 6 great leaders, each with 6 blessings coming out, and that relates to the beginning, the starting point, which is with Rus. We move on. In Perek Gimel Tes Zion, she returns. Vatovo el Chamoso, she returns to her mother-in-law. Vatomer mi at biti, who are you, my daughter? Literally. Vatagedlo, and she told her, Eis kol asher asola ha'ish, everything the man had done for her. Vatoma shesh shahasarim ha'ele nasani, he gave me these 6 barley. Ki omar Eli, he said to me, Eli is in parentheses, because it is another example of ksiv veloikri, it is written but not read. Al tavoi rekom el hachamosech, don't come empty handed to your mother in law. Vatomer, and Naomi says, Shavi viti, rest, my daughter. Arasher teit in echi poldavar. Wait until we know how the matter will fall. How the outcome will be affected. Ki lo yishkota ish ki im ki lo hadavar yom. He won't be satisfied. He won't be quiet until the matter will come to conclusion. So just analyzing this response, the return. Why is she asking? Why is Naomi asking who she is? Well, right, she knows her daughter-in-law, a close family member. Why is she asking who she is?
Well, she has a different look on her face. Maybe
contented,
maybe happy, maybe...
Okay, so what Sally and the Ibn Ezra suggest is that this is an important point, is that when a person's essence is reflected in who they are in their name. When she says, who are you? She's obviously seen there's been a change in essence. Or maybe she's questioning that. Have you changed? Is there contentment? Either she's reflecting that or she's asking about that. To what degree has it changed? That's a possibility. And on a more pshat, on a more even simple level, what time is she walking?
Very early in the morning.
But terem, before what? Yakir Ish Yisrael, before anybody can recognize each other, which is exactly why she's asking that. Right, so just on a pshat level and on a deeper level, right, obviously Boaz has succeeded in leaving early enough for it to be dark, but at the same time, there's the deeper level I was certainly suggesting, is she's asking her, why are you so happy, or are you so happy? Right, and that relates to essence. That relates to who she is. Right, who? Fantastic. Notice something very interesting. Notice something very interesting. The word that Rus uses in responding to say that why she brought the barley is that Boaz says, "I should not return." What's the word she uses?
Rekam,
empty. Where else does the word rekam appear in this Megillah? At the beginning. What did Naomi say? She said, "Don't call me Naomi, because I left Mele'ah Halachti. I left full and Rekam. I returned Rekam." Says Rus, "I don't want to return Rekam." Do you see the circle closing now? Right now, Rus is interpreting this. Do you see? Rus is feeding back into that emptiness. Now, Rus is saying, "This has begun. Everything. The process has started now. The cogs are moving in the machine." That's what Rus is responding over here. Fascinating parallel in the last sentence over here. When Naomi says, I want to know how Yipol Davar, how the matter will fall. Fascinating parallel. When describing the prophecy of Shmuel, there's a very fascinating statement made in Shmuel Aleph, which we'll get to God willing soon. And that is, when Shmuel grew up, Vashem Haya Imah, God was with Shmuel, Velohipil Mikol Davarov Arza. No word of Shmuel ever fell to the ground. No word of his was ever empty. It always came to fruition. And Shmuel was the person who anointed David. Her great. So although Naomi is saying, what Boaz is going to be doing, will not. Let's see, Eich Yipol Davar, how the matter will fall, how it will land on the ground. We know historically as well, there's another person who's going to be very active in Eich Yipol Davar, of her children. So just as well, just as a greater Gnach context, of this metaphor of how something falls down to the ground. Yes, Rachel.
It does feel like Rechem grew. Interesting.
Interesting. I had not thought about that. I would like to give that more thought in terms of that there are a lot of words interchangeable. And in fact, Rav Shimshon Rav Hirsch is one of the people who does a lot of the interchanging of letters. So I'd be very interested to find out. There's actually what they did was they took Rav Hirsch on the Torah and his other collected writings, and they made what's called the etymological dictionary. So they took all the places that he talks about these things, so it would be very interesting to check under Rechem or Rekam to see if that connection relates. Food for thought. I will try to be netter to check that out. Yes. But he does that with a lot of different letters. So the question is, which groups interchange?
Briefly, don't you think, I'm still thinking about Boaz taking that oath, and I think that he was signaling that he really wants food for himself. Because I think of it like chocolate. You would say, okay, here's a plate of chocolate, and it really belongs to that person, so go to that person. But if they don't want it, boy, I really, you know.
I hear you. I hear exactly what you're saying. Just to clarify, the oath was on, which, what are the words he said it on? He says, if the other person will redeem you, great. If not, then I swear I will take you. Yes, you're saying the emphasis is on I would like to. Yes.
I swear it's going to get passed along, perhaps, to the other relative. I think possibly it will.
I hear what you're saying. So I think you're going to see that coming out. I think your thoughts are going to come out in the way he presents it in just a moment.
Okay.
I agree that sentiment is certainly there.
Okay.
So as he presents, you'll see his interest. So moving straight into this to the fourth and last parak of Megillas Rus. Boaz, this is the bottom of page 7. Boaz Allah Hashar. Boaz arrived or ascended to the gate. Why the gate?
Because that's where all the decisions are.
Right, so the Zakenim, the Sanhedrin, would sit at the gate. So he's obviously, this is a legal process which he needs to go to the gate for. Vayeshev Shom, and he sat there. Vihinei. And look at that. Behold, Hagoel of Erashiti Boaz, the person he was just speaking about a few hours ago, happens to be passing by. Remember, this has to come, we have to come back to that medrash that we keep mentioning, not not to see inside now, but what the Midrash says is that when Ruth does what she does proactively, when Naomi does what she does proactively, and when Boaz does what he needs to do proactively, Hashem says, well, everybody's lined up the ducks. All I need to do is make it happen. So Hashem's responding to their proactivity in the right direction by this. It happens to be that he's just passing by at this point in time. As it works out, Hashem is doing his part in orchestrating this divine orchestra. So here we have, and finally, Vayomer Sura Shiva Po Ploni Almoni. Come dwell with me or sit with me, Ploni Almoni, that's his name. Vayoser Vayeshev. And he went to this, and he went off his road, to off the way to sit down. What does his name mean, Ploni Almoni?
Somebody,
anybody, right? Okay, so we're commonly, in the Gemara, the word is used. In the Gemara, the word Ploni Almoni is used to mean, you know, X, Y, Z. You know, meaning anybody. It's the generic. It's the generic name. But let's just going down to etymological, going back to the background of where the word actually comes from. There's a very fascinating duality which I discovered recently, and that is Rashi takes the approach that all of you mentioned immediately and viscerally, which is that Ploni Almoni comes from the word of a lack of identity, lack of knowledge. How Ploni? The word Ploni comes from the word Ki Pale. When something is hidden, when something is hidden from you, then you go to the shoftim to sort it out. Pele, something which is covered. And almoni comes from the word elaine, speechless, without voice, without representation. So Rashi views him as Mr. Anonymous, which is the way it's usually used. So on the one hand, he's Mr. Anonymous. However, the Malbim points out another strand within the same name. And I think this is a very fascinating tension to think about. He says that the word Ploni can also come from the word Ki Yafli Lindor Neder. Yafli is to express, to bring to fruition a thought to bring to fruition a thought to word. Yafli, expression, articulation. That's the Ploni, and the Almoni is Yosef says to the brothers, "We were gathering, we were pulling together sheaves in putting, making them into bundles." Says the Malbim, Ploni Almoni is the person who has the potential to articulate. He has the potential to draw the cord, to pull it all together. And that's the tension in his name. What's going to happen? Much like we saw the introduction to Perek Beis, Ploni Almoni is introduced to us with a duality. Is he going to be the person who's going to recede into anonymity, into history? Or is he going to be the person to tie that knot? His very name has that tension in it, because what's going to be the outcome? Is he going to articulate? Is he going to make it happen? Or is he going to be silent? Is he going to recede? Very fascinating in the very name itself, because we don't know right at this point. Be it as it may.
Is that his name?
It sounds like this was his name, or it may have been his
parents' names are there.
Right, well, at this point in time, his name has the potential of going either direction. It could also mean, just this is a possibility, you always have to ask this, is that if he's got the extra name of Tov, as Timna was pointing out earlier, maybe that's his central name and his dubbed name based on what he chose for his self historically is Ploni Almoni. But question...
It's like not Ploni killed.
Exactly.
It's unlikely. It's the writer. It's the narrator.
Correct. It's the narrator giving it to you. Right. We generally don't name children death and destruction. I mean, sickness and destruction. Right. So that's again, that's because of what the story is, how they express themselves in the story, right? The Gemara discusses and says that their real names may have been other names. Fantastic, right? So that's what we have to think about. But be it as it may, this name has double meaning. Even if it's a dubbed name, it's got the meaning. It's a fork in the road in his life. And the question is going to be, what does he choose? And the fact that you all associate the fact with his being anonymous is as a function of his decision. Right, that's the reason why history has paskened on that tension. So now, another point to contemplate over here is that if his name is Tov, then it sounds like Boaz is ignoring the fact that his name is Tov. Right, just notice that Boaz does not address him as Tov. It's almost like he's ignoring that aspect of him because of his actions. Possible, just something to worth thinking about. True, but boy, but remember, who is the more responsible? The closer Redeemer. So just not to shift any blame, but just to be aware that this man was more responsible than Boaz was even, and he did not take any responsibility up to now. And now we have the actual action. He takes 10 men, and he says, "Let's Let's sit down here. And they sat down. There's a section of the field which belongs to Elimelech. Machra la'ami hashava mistei Moav. So that piece of the field which belonged to Elimelech, Naomi sold when she returned from Moab. Vani Amarti, and I said, Egleos necholemor. You know, I said, it's only right if I just let you know about the following fact, that it was sold. Kenei neged hayoshvim v'neged ziknei ami, by that part of the field, in front of the elders, in front of me, into gaal gaal, if you want to redeem it, then redeem it, fine. V'im lo yigal hagidoli v'eda'a. If not, tell me and I will know. Ki ein zulos chol ligol v'anachi achorecha. There's no one besides for you to redeem first. You got the first dibs. And I'm after you first, exactly. And he's pointing out that you're the front of the train. There's no parallel redeemers on your level. I'm right behind you. Vayomer anachi egal. And he said, responds, I will redeem. So to clarify the issue that is under contention right now, in this sentence, in this presentation, is as we saw last week, but just for revising and recapping what we discussed last week. If you go to Parshas Bahar, which we're about to read in 1.5 weeks' time, the fourth aliyah begins with the following. If a Jewish person becomes poor, and in order to pay his debts, sells his field, the responsibility will be on the closest relative to redeem that field from the buyer, paying the money to get back the property of the poor person. That's what's called Geulas Sadeh. Redeeming of the field. Very clear, the word Geula is used over here. That is what Boaz is presenting as the issue at stake right now to Ploni Amoni. The issue at stake is what happens. Naomi returns. They got no money in Moab. However, they do still have property. She's got nothing. What's she going to do? She either has to eat or have a place to stay. What does she do? She sells the fields. So she sells the field. The question is, are you going to redeem it? Very clear-cut discussion in the Torah, which is why, at this stage in the game, Ploni Amoni accepts. Now notice something. It's not a full field. Did you notice that? It's Chelkas HaSadeh, a piece of the field. What happened to that? Did Elimelech only own half a field?
Maybe it sold it earlier.
Possibly, but then we should have just known about his field, meaning that becomes his field. Why is the emphasis on it being a part of the field? What was that?
To keep some.
Maybe she kept some for herself. That's a possibility. I haven't heard in the portion. That's a very interesting, because we did ask a few weeks ago, where is Naomi staying currently? Another possibility, as the Malvim suggests, is that the field belonged partly to Elimelech and partly to his sons, which means the part that he's discussing right now is whose part? Is his, Elimelech's part, which is therefore who's related to whom? To Naomi. But he's not mentioning Chilion's part, which is related to Ruth. He's only going to mention that in a moment. Okay, so just in terms of the setup, you see there is an agenda here. Right? There is an agenda over here, and the way he sets up this claim over here is that he's only presenting the redemption of Naomi's side of the field, because Naomi's side of the field doesn't come with strings attached. Right? We're about to mention the asterisk in a moment, right? That all sales have. Right? The conditions are about to be mentioned in just a moment. Why, by the way, just before we go on, why do you think he needs 10 people? Why are 10 people being gathered at this point in time before this entire thing goes on? What was that? What was that? Okay, this is a legal transaction. Okay, legal transactions don't need minyanim, they need a base din of 3. So there are other things. Each transaction, each ceremony in halacha requires different amounts of people.
Maybe he was
saying Kaddish for his wife. Okay, I don't think that would make the cut for why it needs to be told now, although that definitely is a possibility. Yes.
Would he need 10 people to do chalitza?
Okay, so maybe a possibility out there is that in order to facilitate a marriage, you need to have 10 people. So you can already see what's happening over here, is that to expedite the process, whether it be his or Ploni Amoni's, remember he said, I'll sort this out, and this has been a long waiting time. So he's already setting up the framework over here for not just the legal decision, which requires perhaps fewer people, but even the marriage. That's what Chazal mentioned. Another possibility Chazal mentioned, also quoted in the Malbim, is that maybe he wants to make a specific drasha at this point before the day begins, expound a specific halacha which is perhaps forgotten, and that is is that the halacha says that we cannot marry Moabite people. But not just Moabite people, Moabites, men. And he wants to make very clear before the day begins, before anything starts, that it's only Moabites, men, and not women. Why does he have to do it now? Because in the morning, he's not the one lined up to marry her. So therefore, there's no conflict of interest at this point in time, technically. If he were to get up afterwards, and then Tov gets up and says, I don't want to redeem her, and then Boaz says, okay, I'm going to set up a baster now, and you know, it's only Moabite men, everybody's scratching their heads and saying, wait a second, Boaz, are you, right? So then his whole marriage is questioned. So Chazal point out that he wants to clarify all the details of this before anything goes ahead, before anything happens and he stands in line for this. Possibility. Just the requirements of making this Joshua or wedding, which is more than the regular requirement of people. Yes, Timna.
Is there any reason that it says Machira instead of
Mochir? Just one moment.
Sell it already?
Oh, yeah, no. That she has sold it. Yes, absolutely. She has sold it. Meaning the point is that she's already lost the land. Now it's in the hands of the Redeemer to get that land back for her. If Elimelech had sold it, then it would be a different story altogether. The point is that she came back and sold because of the need. Now the question is, are you going to save her from her plight? Okay, there's a halachic discussion at which point in the sale we're at, but nonetheless, she has sold it. Yes, Erica.
Or he could sell those fields?
Good question. It seems like it's...
As far as setting up their names again.
That's a good question. I think part of it is that we know that she converted on the way back with Naomi. And part of the waiting period, as some of the Mephoshim suggest, was to clarify exactly that fact. Meaning part of the reason why Boaz may have been waiting is not just because he's inactive, but also he wanted to see how she acts. How is she shaping up in terms of her conversion as well, to make sure on exactly that point. So maybe that was a part of the equation.
What I'm really asking is, does he have to clean up the fact that the boys, Naomi's sons, married Moabite women, and that their fields are like redeemable toward...
Okay, I hear what you're saying. I don't know, the only thing is I don't know if there's a penalty. Meaning I don't know, what you would be suggesting is there needs to be a clarification in order to avert a penalty being taken on the children from intermarrying. I don't think such penalties exist explicitly. So I don't know if that, it could be in terms of their status, but I don't know in terms of their property ownership. I don't know if that's going to make a factor into it.
It sounds like it's pretty legal what he's doing. And
I hear you. I hear what you're saying. Yeah. I hear what you're saying. I think this could be for the sake of more posterity than the legal aspects. Right. Because legal will require only 3 people. The 10 people are more of a, we'll call it a publicity issue. Maybe, a possibility. Joan.
But wasn't this just a clarification that when they did marry Moabite women, it was really permitted because you couldn't marry, it was only because of the men. So actually, it was permitted. But he did this because he didn't want anybody talking and he wanted it out in the open. But it was permitted at that time.
Right, so that's a good question. Meaning, to how far back is he extending this? Maybe he's trying to vindicate, what Eric was saying as well, backwards. Maybe he's trying to clean the slates backwards, so this whole process now is beyond question. Perhaps maybe that's exactly what he's doing over here, and that's important irrespective of himself. Just for cleaning the slates, because you know what? Nobody's done this up till now, right? This is what should have happened 3 months back, right? So this is what should have happened the moment they stepped into town. So now the tables need to be cleaned. Now it needs to be set back in motion. Yes.
Could they not have looked at it? Boaz not have looked at it, and the people in the community not have looked at it, that these boys had died, and therefore they might have died because they were not allowed to.
Yeah, so, yeah, well, that's. Yes, I think that might be part of the hesitation we're about to see in Ploni Amoni's mind. Part of the hesitation he may have in his mind is because of that fact. He's in the shadow of that. And that's perhaps what is holding him back. Right? Maybe. We're going to have to question his motives in just a moment. So, yes, and maybe that's he's addressing that, which doesn't seem to help with Ploni Amoni. I'd like to use our just remaining time. We have just a few minutes for an inordinate amount of psukim But I'd like to just to reach the end of this perek very quickly with some basic comments, just in order that we can start next week on a new footing with the shir. So just a very quick overview of what is about to occur. Very quickly in Pasuk Hey, Vayomer Boaz. Boaz said, "B'yom kenoscha asadam yad Naomi." At the time he bought the field from Naomi, who may eis rusa moviyash eishes hames kanisa lahakim shem hames al nachlasai. So now he adds in the asterisk. Now he adds in the condition. You were thinking about just buying a field back from Naomi. Well, there's actually another owner of the field. It's also the husband of Kilion. And in order to buy back the field from him or her, you need to be made. You need to actually establish the name of the dead, the deceased. Vayomer ha-goel, lo uchal ligol pen li pen ashches es nachlasi. I'm not going to do this lest I destroy my inheritance. Ga'al lucho ato es gu'ulasi ki lo uchal ligol. And he says, I'm not able to redeem. He is already backing out because this extra fact is mentioned. Now, as Rachaleo was saying, this could be because now he's still in fear. He's not yet sure about what happened. Was it clean? Did it cause the death of the previous brothers? Maybe I'm putting myself in a place of danger, perhaps he's thinking in terms of this marriage. But sometimes you also see in the way that people speak, you see slips. Right, you see that people mention things they shouldn't have necessarily. And notice that the word that he uses is lo yuchal ligol li, to myself. Maybe, and the Malbim suggests this, that what? Maybe what's the underlying concern is? In the end of the day, myself. Meaning, I'm jeopardizing, or this is not going to be a diplomatic move for me to be able to marry this girl, that there's still questions above her head. And it's not good, Lee. You see, already just that extra word already tells you what he's thinking about you. Besides all the concerns and so forth, he is concerned for his own inheritance, which is interesting because he becomes the paradigm of lack of name. Interesting, right? The man who's so concerned for names loses his name. Isn't that interesting? Lo yuchal ligol li. When he says he is going to be mashkes, he's going to destroy his name or his legacy. Notice the uncommon eerie parallel to Onan, the second brother of Er, who will not marry Tamar. Vayashkes Arza, he destroys. He doesn't perpetuate the legacy. I'm too worried about destroying the legacy. He is the man on the fence, the one who can't take the jump or the plunge. And therefore, the Megillah tells us in Pasuk Zayin, V'zoslefanim b'Yisrael ala gula v'ala tmura, and this was what they used to do before in Israel, regarding redemption and exchange. L'kayim kol davar shalaf ishna alo v'nasan l're'ehu. A person would take off their shoe and give it to their friend. V'zos ha-te'udah b'Yisrael. This is the evidence, or this is the testimony in Israel. V'yomar ha-goel l'voaz, k'nei l'ch'lach v'yishlof na'alov. The goel said, okay, coming back to our story, the voice jumps back into the story. Take off your shoe, and he retakes off your shoe as a redemption. What's the transaction going on over here? The Gemara says this is a very simple legal transaction, what's called chalipin, an exchange, meaning, as opposed to having to have the entire asset in front of you and do a legal transaction on the asset, you'll use a representative item. And let's say the shoe, the cloth, the yarmulke at weddings, if you've ever seen at Tanaim, the rabbi will often take off his yarmulke and use it as the chalipin, what's called an exchange, a representative exchange for the legal transaction. What is the transaction right over here? What's being transferred as represented by this shoe?
The right, exactly.
Legally, the goel has the legal right to the property and Zibum. He is now buying that right off him, represented in the shoe. But of course, we should not lose focus of the fact that although it's very convenient, as Ibn Ezra points out, to use your shoe because everybody has shoes, and it's not embarrassing to take off a shoe as opposed to any other part of clothing to use as a chalipin. That's what Ibn Ezra says. But the shoe over here is also a parallel to our ceremony of chalitza, right? So even though this is a legal transaction, it's just being used to transfer the rights to who's going to redeem the field. Of course, symbolically, Ploni Almoni is becoming the base chalutz hanal, the house without a shoe, right? He's becoming the person who did not take the responsibility of Yibum. Even though that's not legally what's going on over here, metaphorically we know very well that that's what's happening to his household. moving on into Pasuk Tes, Vayom Boaz Lazakeinu V'chol Ha'om, Eidim Atem Hayom. Boaz turns to the people around and says, you are all witness. Ki konisi es kol asher le'elimelech ve'es kol asher le'chilion u'machlon miyad na'ami. I've bought everything which Machlon and Kilion have. V'gam esrus ha'mavio eshes Machlon konisi li li'isha la'akim shem ha'mes al'nachlasoy, to establish his name on his inheritance. V'lo yikoreis shem ha'mes me'im echol. The name of the deceased will not be cut off. Mishar Makomo, and from the rest of his place, or the Avigarius place, Eidim Atem Hayom. You are witnesses today. And so therefore, he is bringing this in full circle. Interestingly, the Medrash mentions that the word Machlon in this context has the root of the word Mechila, forgiveness. It's interesting that fully now, the Yalkut Shimoni identifies that now is the point where this hovering, this neshama which could not find place, is finally finding its final resting. It's coming back. There's this full circle of forgiveness coming back now in this statement of Boaz. I'm going just a couple minutes over time. In order to finish this, those who need a relief, please feel no obligation to stay. I just feel that we should finish this rather than starting half on one foot and then moving into another conversation. Just to conclude the psukim very quickly, Vayamru kol ha'om asher b'sha'ar, all the people at the gate said, Vazakenim and the elders, Edim, we are witnesses. Yitain Hashem es ha'isha ha'ba'al be'secha k'rachel u'chalei'a asher bonu shneim es beis Yisrael. Let God make this lady who comes to your house like Rachel and Leah, that both of them built the house of Israel, v'asechal be'efras, and you should do valorous deeds in Ephras, u'krosh mo be'es lechem, and you should have a name in Beis Lechem. V'yibes choka beis Peretz, your house should be like the house of Peretz, asher yoldah samol Yehuda, which you, Tamar gave birth to Yehuda. We're going to discuss that in greater depth next week. Minazera asher yiten Hashem lecha minanarazaz, from the seed that you will have from this woman. Interesting point to notice over here. First of all, Ephras is his family names. They were Ephratim, as we saw at the beginning of the Megillah. And Beis Lechem is his city. So they are saying you should have ever-expanding bracha in your family and in your city. Why Rachel and Leah? What is similar to Rachel and Leah and Rus? Is they all come from the outside and they become integral parts of the enterprise of Israel. Rachel and Leah come from the outside and they import value, which becomes part and parcel of the entity of Klal Yisrael. That's what they're saying. Just as they did that, you, Rus, are bringing in, like Rachel and Leah, the foundations of the enterprise of Israel, the kingship of Israel. Karachel v'Leah, very meaningful in terms of the parallel that they're evoking in this blessing. And finally, Vayikach Boaz is Rus in Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vatihi lo le'isha v'yavo eleo. They got married, they had a relationship. Vayayitin Hashem lo herayon, she conceived Vatehled ben, and she gave birth to a boy. Remembering that she was married to a much younger man for many years, and there was no children. Now, debatable, as Malka pointed out, to what degree they were married beforehand, but assuming that they were married and they did not have children, there is a fascinating point that it says, Vayitein Hashem Lahirayon. God's involved in giving her a child because there wasn't a child beforehand from the previous marriage, when it was much more of a plausible place and time to have a child.
Although it reflects more on Machlon than on her, therefore.
Right, medically, right. So it may have reflected specifically on Machlon, but it is noteworthy to note that Hashem is much involved in this process. As of course, but this is the first time we've explicitly seen Hashem mentioned in the Megillah orchestrating a particular event. This is where it finally comes to fruition. Dalad Yudalad Vatomana Nashim and Naomi Baruch Hashem Ashelo Yishpes Eloch Goel Hayom. God has not wrested from you a redeemer today. Who's got the redeemer? Who's claimed to have the redeemer? Not Rus, but Naomi. Vayikoresh Shmo Yisrael. Let him have a name in Israel. Who should have a name in Israel? The baby, but maybe also Boaz, the one who gave up his name, the one who took the place of somebody who was scared of losing his name, is getting a name. Interesting, right? And he'll be to you, you being Naomi. Naomi should have a meshiv nefesh, a return of the soul of a lost husband, and to sustain her old age. Because your daughter-in-law, which you love, bore for you a daughter, a son, which is better than seven sons. Again, it's Naomi So it's almost like she is in the place of Naomi. She is having her Elimelech, her husband, line continued, more than even Ruth. Ruth is sidestepping herself here. And who nurses the child? Naomi nurses the child. The neighbors called her him a name, saying, Yulad ben la Naomi. Naomi has the son. Oved, and they called his name Oved, server. Who avi Yishai, avi David, is the father of Yishai, the father of David. Fascinating. These are the same women who in Perek Aleph were asking what's going on and return to their houses. And now suddenly the same women are coming out in the same language. Vatikrena, they call, and now celebrating the completion of the cycle. It's the crowd, it's the audience now celebrating the final fruition. And just to, for the sake of completion, Ve'ele told us Peretz, Peretz holides Chetzron, Chetzron holides Ram, Ram holides Aminadov, Aminadov holides Nachshon, Nachshon holides Salma, Salmon holides Boaz, Boaz holides Oved, Oved holides Shishai, Yishai holides David. The entire chain from start to finish to getting to the point of David, which Ruth is an integral part of. Next week we will discuss the triangle, the three stories which come together in this Megillah concluding it. I apologize again for going over time.